I'm Farrah Smith, and you're listening to Legends of Tabletop.
Hey, everybody, this is John.
And this is Vince.
And you're listening to Legends of Tabletop.
Creating legends one die at a time.
Thank you for joining us today at Legends of Tabletop, and I am here with the lovely and talented Farrah Rose Smith of Manted Media. You are an award-winning writer and director, and you've won, I think it's the best experimental film. And I've seen somewhere that experimental and bizarre, and you have a fixation on a spoken goal of upsetting stagnation. Can you please share with us what awards and recognition you've achieved?
First of all, thanks for having me here. It's nice to talk about this stuff. So I won, it was the Shaughnessy Film Festival, which takes place in Boston, Massachusetts every year. My film, The Atrocity Shop, won the Best Experimental Film last year. And it was a very kind of avant-garde, strange thing. I'm trying to think of the best way to sum that up.
Where can we find your film?
I have a page on YouTube. I think it's up on YouTube. Grimoire Pictures is what the company is called that I do these short experimental films through. YouTube, I think it's / Grimoire Pictures. I should know that. It is my own company. I should know that. But yes, it is up.
Well, I did notice that when I watched that earlier. But we're gonna shift back to Manted for a moment. The tagline for your publication is celebrating women and the weird in fiction and the arts. Would you care to elaborate upon that tagline and what you intend to express with it?
Sure. So the magazine started the initial idea, I think around July 2015, so right before kind of the Necronomicon convention that year. And the general idea was that, well, there has been a push for greater diversity in weird fiction, not just weird fiction, but, you know, every genre, but specifically, especially when we're discussing Manted and the development of Manted, that's what we were focusing on. So, I thought it would be essential to have platforms because, you know, that's one of the main issues is there isn't enough opportunity for publication for diverse writers. It was to encourage women, LGBTQ, people of color, the differently abled, to write weird fiction, and also the idea that we want people also reading weird fiction and to kind of spread the word about it, because people, that's another issue, is there's an issue of access. For example, if you, a lot of the small press books, which run a lot of the weird fiction, you don't find them very often in libraries and such. So trying to get all these ideas together in one place. And it initially started with the idea that it would be, an arts and literary publication. So the initial issue, the first issue is very different from the second. The second is more of has more of an anthology presentation.
It does. So,
yeah, it was streamlined.
It is a very gorgeous publication, and I really loved the introduction that you had written for the publication, which again reiterates what you had just spoken of providing a platform for those that really don't have a specific platform for their voices to be heard, and thank you for providing that platform.
I want to add one little thing to that, just because this is an element that I get into discussion about when we talk about the idea of separate platforms. So the interesting thing is some of the opposition sometimes will say, why create a separate platform? People want to be competing on the main stage and in the main publications and anthologies and magazines. So that was one thing that I was very intent to get across with Manted, was that we are creating a kind of introductory stage for people to jump in, to feel comfortable, to feel that they have encouragement and that they're wanted in that arena, and then move on from there. So it's also not meant to create any type of exclusivity within within that, the idea of that. That's just another element of that.
Yeah, this leads to my next question, which would be, I know that the title of the publication says magazine, but holding it in my hand is definitely more of an anthology than a, and it's more substantial than a magazine that would see more regular publication, say monthly or something. Let's see, what led you to focus on the biannual anthology format versus a quarterly or more frequently published magazine?
Well, when it started, the initial intent was to have it be quarterly. That quickly kind of changed just with the workload. Also, the idea of it having, the idea of it right now being more of an anthology. There's also a, even just with the kind of technical specifications of the design of it, it lasts longer. In the form it is now, it's going to last longer in the way you have it than a traditional magazine. So that's kind of the physicality of it. But in terms of kind of the switch from a quarterly magazine to biannual, to be perfectly honest, it's a struggle to sustain the physical copy. That's why one of the main drives in the beginning was to have that physical copy, because it's kind of the a lot of the people that I kind of function with, they love the nostalgia of holding something. But it's also available online, and that does create a kind of progression in terms of people purchasing the actual magazine. So right now our struggle is that it's not very much self-sustaining, and we're trying to kind of figure out how to address that so that there can be future issues.
Okay, now that leads to, I'm going to interject for a moment and say that before I came back home today, I spent some time at my local library, and I was looking over a copy of Publishers Weekly, and I had read an article where they were talking about the drop in sales on the Kindle and whatnot, that people are drifting more towards actual book publications and that the Kindle may be a trend that has passed. So again, just to remind our viewers, where can we purchase a hard copy of Manted Magazine?
So on the main website, mantedmagazine.com, there is a link on the main page that will lead to the amazon.com page where it can be purchased. Also, you can just type it into Amazon, the search engine, and it should come up, both the second and the first issue.
Okay. Excellent. Now, the content that is covered under that umbrella definition, women in celebrating women and the weird in fiction and the arts, the content covered under that umbrella definition that you set forth is very broad. Are there specific guidelines you find yourself falling back upon to kind of chart your intuition regarding what works that you select for publication?
Yes. First of all, the initial call for submissions, they usually, I state that We're looking for weird fiction, but also dark fantasy, dark science fiction, magical realism, and also things that include, you know, trends in current weird, like, you know, the surrealism and experimental approaches, a lot of which we're seeing right now popping up. So that is very broad in its kind of thematic search, so to speak. Yeah, it is very, when I'm thinking about the first issue, was a very wide range of types of stories. The second was a little bit more tighter knit in terms of theme, but still, again, very loose. The hope is that as it progresses, as we get into further issues, that we will get more into weird fiction specifically.
But yeah, while I, for personal reasons, am obviously focused upon the fiction selections that you provided, would you care to expand upon the other priorities of Mantid, say poetry and art that you might be looking for?
Sure. So the initial issue, we had that more traditional magazine approach where we had reviews and opinion editorials and such. Quickly realized that that was kind of taking away from the kind of power of the mission statement, which was to provide the platform that we wanted to provide for people as writers and artists. So that brought it to this second current issue, which is primarily stories, some poetry, and two photo shoots, experimental art photo shoots. And it's along the same kind of themes of you know, providing the platform is the big thing. It's interesting because the idea initially was to have it be a half and half split so that there would be a very kind of heavily presented section of art, both photography and also, you know, there were things we were, you know, initially pursuing like feminist sculptors and visual artists and painters and things. The issue of that is on the budget we had, it was that's tough to try to do that. And it's not really fair to those artists to ask to present their work and not offer what they deserve for it. So that's one of the reasons why it ended up getting scaled back to an anthology format. And likely with the third, which the initial stages of planning are starting now, the art section may be scaled back completely and just left until there's a little more momentum and growth for the publication itself to provide for, you know, what the kind of things we want to attract and display in future issues.
Okay. And again, just as a reminder to any viewers that if you find yourself not able, like financially not able to purchase a copy, it's just a friendly reminder to please, your library will be happy to work with you if you request that they purchase a copy of this as well, not just for your enjoyment, but you have no idea who's going to pick this up. I know that today I was stuck at the dentist's office for a very long time in the waiting room, and I did have the opportunity to read more than just one story to check the formatting. And there is some very surprisingly wonderful, very wide-ranging work in here. I'm only on to the fourth tale, going from front to back. I'm on the fourth tale, and it's very good. It's shockingly good. I am very pleasantly surprised by what I have read, and I really highly recommend it. If you have any special ladies in your life that do like weird fiction as well, I recommend this as a way to thank them for their presence in your life. So off my little soapbox now, would you care to share with us some of the other obstacles that you've had to overcome, like unforeseen difficulties with running Manted Magazine that you wouldn't have thought that you'd have come across?
In terms of ones I wasn't sure I'd come across, I'm not quite sure. The biggest obstacle is financing. And okay. that's for anything, for anybody doing that. The idea of getting it into kind of a more of a successful business format and planning, that's the big hurdle. Especially when I started it very kind of, it was very bare bones operation. You know, let's do this thing and make the change. And then it picked up steam, which I was very thankful for, but didn't expect maybe so in the scale that it did. So you know, maintaining the project just in terms of finances, that's a struggle. That's a struggle for any publication. I'm just thinking, the first issue had people, I had more people working on it, working with me, interviewers and writers and people reviewing stories as well. So we were all kind of college age in that, you know, time. Everybody got a full-time job and that becomes a struggle to continue to work on extra material. So the second issue was pretty much me, with a few people who were very helpful, came in just, you know, on their own time, which it wouldn't have come together if they hadn't. So I was, even though it seems to be, you know, so I'm the editor. I kind of put everything together and you know, final presentation is on me, but it did take a village and I freely admit that it's very much a community effort to bring, Manted together.
Absolutely. And it's very beautifully put together. I really do. It's gorgeous. That's all I have to say about it at this point. But shifting to your experiences in film, The Atrocity Shop, which is available for viewing on YouTube. Again, I'm just going to repeat this. It can be found at youtube.com/, what is it, Grimoire Pictures?
Yes.
Excellent. Grimoire Pictures. And it can be found there. I recommend viewing it. It's a wonderful watch. It's very intriguing. And there are some surprises in there. You'll find them. Just watch.
Yeah. It's for people don't like very kind of, if you like avant-garde weird kind of things that don't quite make sense, but they're interesting looking, they might enjoy it.
The ambiance is definitely there. I really appreciated the ambient music, the sounds that you had paired up with it. It was great.
I will cut in, sorry to interrupt you on that. I will just say that the music done for that film was done by an artist working out of New York called Portable Jesus. And people should go on and look up his music and his work, because he's an incredible electronic musician and composer. So just one little note, people should go look at that if they do enjoy the score for that film.
Okay, Portable Jesus. Awesome. Let's see, when did you learn that you wanted to work in and with film?
So I was one of those kids that grew up watching the old horror movies with my dad, and, you know, Mystery Science Theater 3000 and all that stuff. And also, you know, I was a very kind of, very isolated, kid. So it was all books and movies and storytelling just from the beginning. And, you know, I'd kind of jump thematically over the years. So it'd be horror for a while and then gangster films and then, you know, art house, avant-garde and, you know, kind of all that stuff. Which I think any fan of film just kind of has those stages, those obsessive stages of viewing. But yeah, I loved it. And it was film was a sanctuary for me just as much as books were. especially during teenage years. I was very isolated and had a lot of health problems and didn't really interact with people at all. So that was my, that was the world I built, was storytelling. So I continued to write. I've been writing since I was, you know, very little. But it was always, I was so visually oriented, that kind of didn't satisfy me. So I began to pursue film. I went to Emerson College. I didn't finish. I went for 2 years. I had my own program. It was this kind of independently designed thing for avant-garde production design. So hoping to go into production design for those kind of art house films. That didn't end up working out for me. I've been in kind of this this brilliant program at the Rhode Island School of Design for digital video production and animation, which is now kind of changing focus. It's now primarily an animation program. But I've been in this program for, it's something that can be finished in 2 years, but I took seven because I do what, I don't know, anti-authority person. But that helped me kind of hone my kind of dark vision and that kept me going on the film end of things. And that's actually, it was through that program that I made The Atrocity Shop.
Excellent. Now you say 7 years that you've been involved with this. That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, the way I approached the program, rather than doing it as people did, where they just barrel through all the classes, and I'd take one, I'd stop, I'd do a lot of writing, a lot of thinking about what projects I want to do, things I want to develop, looking at the problems in kind of my general outlook in terms of making films, and then I take another and do it again. I have a very kind of, I think what's kind of made it difficult for me in undergrad was that I didn't my brain doesn't really function on that kind of, I don't know, that very kind of linear learning system. So I was lucky that through different programs and programs designed for adults, which I would encourage people to look into, especially if they are people interested in film and what, you know, maybe they can't afford to go to film school or are looking for alternative learning or continuing ed, should look into art schools and their programs, especially RISD if you're a Rhode Island local. That provided a place for me with my alternative circumstances and kind of alternative mind to create in a environment that was supportive of that individual vision.
And what led me to comment about that 7 years, did you notice with time that the training reflected the advances in technology that may have been made since the beginning of the first class that you had gone to? Or was it just, was it an approach of the same methods, but using different facets of the same project, perhaps?
The methods, I mean, they definitely kept up as the entire program was, you know, there were overhauls done several times to accommodate new technology and software, and bringing in those shifts, those industry shifts in production. So in that program, they were very cognizant of that, and to make sure that people being trained were being trained in what they would actually be working with if they decided to go off on you know, actual pursuit of jobs after completing it. I didn't really take it in terms of wanting to work on other people's things, which I did for a while. I did, I worked, I've done camera work and, a DP work and makeup art. I was a makeup artist for a while, did that whole thing. Just not really my thing. I've done a lot of those jobs on the student films art film directors and such. So yeah, it wasn't really my thing. So it was more of a personal creativity enrichment thing for me to pursue that in that arena. And it helped me as a writer too, honestly, because it very much kind of separated. It was a very unique way to learn storytelling, which was, I think, for me, it was in addition to, I kind of grew up in theater, so I had the advantage of having like 10 or 15 years of having watched stage plays and analyzed that writing very intensely, you know, intently and intensely as a kid. And it was, that's a bit of a tangent, but there were definitely stages of storytelling in terms of an education. So for me, it went, you know, theater, film, and I don't know, whatever's next. And then I've always been writing. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, weird. I can hear myself echoed a little bit. And that's all right. Let's see. What qualities do you strive for when making a film that let you know this area is complete? Do you have a to-do list of sorts that let you know that once these requirements have been met in this area, be it audio, lighting, makeup, costume, script, any facet of that, how do you know that that specific area is complete and it's time to move on?
So there is the separation kind of in pre-production breakdown. There is a very, depending on kind of, this can vary from person to person. Some people prefer to work in a very kind of traditional way where there are very specific breakdowns of these things. And other people are a little more art house, a little more strange, which was my approach. So there is a pre-production breakdown, depending on, I always worked with skeleton crews just because it was more practical. Especially I think when somebody has a very, particular vision, I don't want to say auteur because that's very, you know, kind of narcissistic, but when you're very intent on what you want in a product when it comes to film, for me personally, it was better to have less people working on it. But yeah, I mean, to know when things are done, what I do is I have these massive checklists and they, you know, they go in rotation. So just each stage of the project, and I'll leave you in terms of leeway, you leave leeway. I do personally in editing. Like I edit my own films, so most of my kind of creative freedom happens there. And I try to allow for that when I'm shooting as well. There are, you know, breakdowns of their shot lists and things. You know, people decide if they want to use a shot list or storyboards, and you know, it depends on who's making what. But yeah, it's. Some aspects are linear, some allow for more creativity.
Okay, because if I seem kind of blank when I'm talking to you about filmmaking, I must admit it's because I know nothing. And so you can speak on this, and it will be fantastic, because is there a specific order when you approach?
I would just jump in and say that even as someone who has been in, you know, that program that I was in for 7 years and did, you know, film undergrad for 2 years and all this, there's still things I don't know how to do, and still things I do that I do my own way that traditional filmmakers would not do. I mean, I immediately think to, I don't know who's going to get mad at me saying this, but I immediately think to when I knew I wasn't going to end up finishing college, undergrad, that particular program, was when we got the manual of all the things like we couldn't do, and like all the, and it was very, I mean, that school, that particular school was very kind of studio oriented, and you know, the people that wanted to go out to Hollywood to make the films and work for, you know, Paramount or whatever, and that very traditional path. So there are a lot of rules, there's, you know, union rules and specific procedures and things that I had already learned were not going to work for me personally as an artist, because I was approaching film more as an artist than a filmmaker, and more as a, you know, this baseline storytelling and you know, with kind of an obsession with those visual, especially dark visual aspects, but trying to create more of an experience than a film. So I knew that that traditional kind of methodology was not going to work for me, which is why I left and continued with the RISD program and that kind of sense of freedom. Now, I will say just about that, and it is skewing a little bit off of what you asked. I apologize for that. But I'm trying to think of how I can phrase this. I don't know. I guess it depends on your goals. I mean, if you have the goal of you want to go out to Hollywood and make the big films, you know, that would help to finish your degree, follow those rules, get used to doing those things. You know, that's not for me. It just wasn't for me. So I did. That's why I continue to do small things. I am working on my second short film. I'm one of those people who has a stack. I think every filmmaker has a stack of scripts that are getting very dusty. So there's this continuation and hope for work, but things don't get made in the kind of degree of speed that we would like them to be made. But I am working on my second editing my second short film, official. There are little things that I did along the way that are just not kind of worthy of an audience publicly. But yes, this is the second thing. And once again, it was very, I had a great crew on this one, actually. It was my first time working with a bigger crew. But yeah, I'm kind of going off on my own little tangent, so I'll go back to you.
No, I want to hear more about this film that you have in progress that's almost out. When can we expect to see that on the Grimoire Films website?
Yeah, I'm not sure when it'll be up online yet, because once it gets... I keep saying it's almost finished. It will be finished hopefully by the end of the year, and hoping to submit it to a few festivals. It's very small, very short, very experimental. So it will have a likely, if it gets any festival runs, they will be brief, and it will be up on the website on YouTube probably early next year. It's another experimental kind of avant-garde science fiction film in this case, which it was the intent with this one was to be even more thought-provoking than the first, but intentionally so. I think the first one was more of an exercise in weird atmosphere, whereas this one there was an actual underlying premise and an underlying philosophical premise that hopefully people pick up on. But once again, if not, you know, it's just that's fine. It's kind of another one pretty to look at, but we'll see if it comes across. The script for that, it's called Rapture. get recognized at the Massachusetts Independent Film Festival for best, what is it called? Short script. I should know the name of the thing that I got. That's only because, you know, those things come as a huge shock to me still. So, I was proud of that just because that was a writing kind of thing. The writing of the script was a huge part of that project. So, that's just a little element of that. But yeah, it's very strange and it's coming out soon. That's all I can really say about it.
Okay. Let's see. Are there any existing works by others that you draw from for various aspects of your own filmmaking work?
Yes. Many.
Would you care to share those
with us? Yes. I'm trying to think of where to begin. So I love the Quay brothers, Guy Madden. I very much adore Kenneth Anger and his films. You know, if I were to put somebody at the top of what I kind of look at in terms of what I present, there is a very kind of in my films, I don't want to say homage, it's not really the right word, or prestige, it doesn't quite work, but Kenneth Anger definitely influences a lot of what I do in film and in writing as well. And then, honestly, I don't stick just to certain, not I don't really kind of stick on just the occult or art house or horror. I also very much liked classic films and the gangster films very much so. Brian De Palma was a big deal for me. as a teenager, I was very much, you know, I consider, I get into arguments with people all the time because my favorite movies are not horror movies, they're gangster films. Like, I loved Carlito's Way. I think I've seen it maybe 200 times.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so yeah, there's that. I'm trying to think just in terms of directors. One of those people who blanks when asks for the names, but yeah, mostly, you know, Guy Madden, Kenneth Anger, Brian De Palma, Francis Ford Coppola, you know, kind of the go-to people for art house and the go-to people for, you know, gangster and classic film.
Is there a specific, I may have asked you this before, and if I did, stop me. Is there a specific order when approaching a project, whether it be writing or film or whatever creative endeavor that you want to do? Is there a specific order that you take when approaching a project that you address areas of completion? And what would those areas of completion be? And this is going more into the realm of just creativity in general.
Yeah. Because once again, that's a thing that's, for me personally, it's kind of different than other people do. I try not to kind of dictate to myself the process, because things, depending on what I'll be doing, I kind of got into a little bit of that in terms of the film process. So I'll just think about it in terms of something else, like, for example, writing. So ideas come in very different ways, which I'm sure you know as a writer. You know, they come in different ways, so they'll be...
You know, I'm new at that, so...
Everybody starts somewhere. But the, yeah, it's, you know, so writing, you know, maybe a title name will come and you'll write a story, or I'll sit and there'll be a sentence, or you'll see something out and it'll spark an idea, or, you know, all these, you know, in terms of inspiration, there's little way to kind of put shackles on that, but they're, also is that's very separate, the idea of inspiration from actual process, because I don't know, it varies. Except I'm just thinking about how I've approached different projects, and I've actually approached everything I've done very differently, and I think I'm still searching for what works. And honestly, I think that's okay, because I mean, even when I talk to some writers that have been doing it for like 40 years, they're still sometimes will say, you know, hey, I did this for a long time. It's not working anymore, so, you know, try new things. Yeah, I'm just trying to think of them in terms of what you're talking about stages of completion. I think that can be so variable depending on project that I don't know if I could put one kind of definitive answer into that. Because, for example, there'll be things that I can sit down and write a story in a day. Or there are stories that have taken me 10 years to finish. That, you know, there's this one thing that I have set aside that I knew, you know, I thought of it when I was, I don't know how old, maybe 17 years old. I knew I wasn't going to be able to write it at that time because I hadn't had the life experience. And I have this giant binder I keep in the back of my closet, and I'm not going to, I probably won't touch it until I'm maybe 40 or 50. And it's this kind of very, there's an experiential demand for that project that I don't kind of want to touch, but it's something that I always keep in the back of my mind. So there's all different kind of things you can do, even approaching kind of the existence of being an artist as an art, which is how I kind of look at, like, for example, that project or just trying to decide what one wants to focus on for whatever they want to do next. So.
Okay. And this leads into when doing films, which do you begin with in those separate areas of, you know, you write down your ideas, of course, you get the script. That's what I'm guessing. You get the script, or at least most of it handled. And then scene cuts and camera angles and all of that. But how do you address these things? It seems to me, because I'm so blindly unfamiliar with film, I know I'd have no idea where to start, and I'd probably just go to YouTube and look at the Lloyd Kaufman Make Your Own Damn Movie that he has from, like, Troma Film or whatever. Have you seen that channel at all?
I don't think I have.
Gosh. Yeah, it's silly. But yeah, is there a specific order that you go about tackling films when you decide I'm going to make a movie and this is, well, my film, my short film, this is what I'm going to do? Is there any order?
I mean, there should be. there should be an order to that. I'm very kind of anti-authority. You know, I think I'm split between type A, type B type thing. So sometimes I'll be very intent on planning and things, and other times I'm just wing it and see what happens, which I think it's healthy to have a little bit of both in you. But in terms of that, you want to, you write something first, you think about, and also you want to write in terms of if you're somebody who actually wants to make a film, especially on a smaller scale. You want to do it yourself. You're not trying to get up into the big studios and stuff. You just want to make films. You write something, usually keeping in mind what your resources are going to be. So you write a script, you go through it, you start to break down things that you'll need in terms of props, costumes, locations. It's a big deal. It's something you want to look into very much ahead of time, because that requires permits and things. Because there is some degree of, legality you have to embrace when making, smaller films.
Did you need to get any permits for the location with that big, beautiful granite lion?
That was the Boston Public Library. I did not.
Okay.
that was a covert operation in my case, which, don't do that, please. If people are watching and want to make films, just don't do that. You want to get a permit. You want to call and go through the, you don't want to create more of a problem for yourself than you need to, would be my advice. And I got very lucky there because that was not the most intelligent thing to do. But yes, so you go through a script and you make these breakdowns. It's really an issue of, a lot of the people I interact with who don't end up making their films, this has been a thing because everybody wants to be a filmmaker and I'm even still uncomfortable calling myself that for two reasons. One, because it's not technically film, it's video. And two, because, the idea of to call yourself a filmmaker, you want to think that you're actively putting out material. I mean, there are filmmakers, especially women filmmakers, especially in the New England area, that are actively putting out things. And I would encourage people to, look at them as well. Two of the people that I really love locally, Andrea Wolinen and Izzy Lee, they're actively making films in the horror genre locally. And I would very much encourage people to check out their films. And also, if you want to be a filmmaker, that's, especially if you're a woman or non-binary person who wants to make a film, you need to seek out people who are doing it and doing it through different avenues and different means. That kind of completely went off of what you were saying, but the initial question, now it completely left me.
Oh, it's okay. You addressed it, and we were just talking about creativity.
See, I told you, I go off on these little tangents of mine, but I encourage people to do things. That's what I wanted to say. The people who want to make the films, they call themselves the filmmakers and they don't ever do it, are usually the perfectionists, or the people that get very hung up on the people. I would advise people not to, if you want to be a filmmaker on a lower, if you want to start on a kind of modest level, you can't be looking at the people that are making the films, even the independent films at $40,000 and all these things. You need to accept to yourself in the beginning that you need to start somewhere, because I see so many artists that don't ever do it because they're so caught up in the idea that it needs to be a certain way. And I mean, as an artist, that you want something to be like that. You don't, that's the struggle is, I think of the idea of a painter. You have the vision, they have the vision in their head, and it's without those years of practice in building skill, nobody's going to see that. So That's just my one little thing, is I was encourage people in any art medium, just do it. Just do it and don't let the external things ruin it for you. Because I do that. I go in and out and I will stop. I take breaks with everything, with writing and film, because it can be very, especially as a woman and a younger woman trying to work in those fields, and there's a lot of kind of things that are very negative. It takes strength and kind of building yourself up. But it's important to make sure the work gets done and to work. I like the idea. I recently read an article, and I'm kicking myself that I don't remember the woman's name, but she said, especially women need to embrace the idea of working without permission. So not looking in the literal sense of don't get permission, not like the permit thing, but you know, work, if some, you know, don't let somebody tell you you can't do something. Don't, you know, and because that's something that held me back. And it's held back a lot of my friends who were going to be incredible, and I mean incredible artists, and they couldn't do it. Because the environment isn't always the healthiest. So I just, you know, I'm trying to be an advocate for people who want to do things as well. So.
Okay. Let's see. Let's cut to the final five. That is what we call the final five questions that I will ask you. And then after this, we can have a free discussion, do whatever that is comfortable for you. Okay. The final five. Now, do you prefer to play video games or tabletop games, if you do play any games at all?
I prefer, that depends. I do play games very seldom now because it's hard to get people to play them. But yeah, mostly video games because it's usually that solitary thing. Yeah, I haven't done it in some time. But
Do you have any favorites?
I remember I play the very simple things because I'm very much an idiot when it comes to gaming. But I love the very kind of, I play things like, it's been a long time, that's why I'm thinking of. I play like Animal Crossing. I used to play, I'm trying to think of this Batman game that I used to play. I can't remember it. Oh, God, what was the name? I used to play all the Batman games on, like...
The Arkham Asylum?
Yes, that's what it was. Yep. I'm so behind. Yeah, I'm trying to get in on D&D stuff right now. And so I'm transitioning into that, which will be nice.
Yeah, we currently have a weekly D&D 5th version game that my husband's running, and I just kind of show up just to roll the dice and move miniatures around. That's all I do. Yeah. But Star Wars or Star Trek, are you a fan of sci-fi?
I love sci-fi. That, I should have touched upon that when I was talking, yes.
Yes.
Star Wars. Definitely Star Wars. I was extremely obsessed. I don't know if you want me to go on or just give quick answers. So
okay. tell me why you like the Star Wars more than Star Trek.
God.
Make the argument.
Well, I won't knock Star Trek because I'm a Star Trek fan too, but Star Wars was just, for me, it was the idea of, you know, like I was always attracted to the things that felt like Shakespearean tragedy in any genre. And for me, it was like the Shakespearean tragedy in space. As a little kid watching it, that was the idea. My brother loved it. He had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of figures and toys. So I would always play with them instead of playing with people. So that was kind of the origin of storytelling, very much started with Star Wars and and that kind of era of things. So, yeah.
Dune, for me, always kind of held that higher echelon of Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah. if it would have been that question, yes. Because that's probably one of my favorite books of all time. Definitely.
If you could have one superpower, what would it be and why?
Oh, God. I feel like I was going to say invisibility because I feel like everyone says that, but... Yeah, that's why I don't want to say it because everyone says it, but I think I'd like to breathe underwater.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
Why? I don't know. I like fish. No, I love marine life and, you know, the ocean. Yeah, that's the lamest thing, the answer. But yes, I do. Ooh. You know, I want to talk to whales.
That's a lame answer. That'd be cool. I miss living near Bodega Bay because you could watch the humpback whales.
Oh, nice. I used to go to Block Island a lot off the coast of Rhode Island, and you know, you'd see, it's not even that far off of the coast. It's only about an hour out, and I'd see the whale, like the giant whale tails smashing into the waves. So yeah, wow. Another early thing I liked. But yeah, that's it.
Here's a silly question: Marvel or DC?
Oh God. DC.
Okay.
Only because I feel like I like their, I like the women better. They're, to me, they're, I like the, I don't know, I feel more power in the women in DC. So okay. I kind of gravitate towards that and the darkness of it.
Cool. So. And, oh gosh, now I think you just answered this one with the last one. Actually, two ago, I think you answered it. Sci-fi or fantasy?
That's actually a really hard question. God, sci-fi. Yeah, it'd have to be sci-fi. But yeah, not only because of film, and but definitely books. Mm-hmm. I'll just, you know, throw in them. Dune just kind of changed my life as a novel. And The Man Who Fell to Earth was a brilliant. No, I know a lot of people know the film, but the novel is brilliant as well. And, you know, Philip K. Dick, The Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch, that was one of my favorite books growing up, intensely so. That got me into all of his literature. So in terms of sci-fi, very literature-based more so than film. I got into sci-fi film later on, except for, like, the Star Wars things in the beginning and such. So, but yeah, and in fact, I'd say, and now my, you know, kind of horror people will be mad again, but more so, I'm a fan of sci-fi than horror, which is interesting. But, you know, I think I give myself a little leeway because weird fiction, luckily, is kind of the merging of the minds in terms of these speculative genres. So I give myself a little bit of a break.
I was going to say, Event Horizon, come on. Sorry, that's got to be up there as one of my favorite films, The Hit Horizon. But that's okay. Yeah. So again, thank you so much, Farah, for taking the time to talk with me today. I really do appreciate it. And I look forward to conversations with you in the future. And when do you think we should expect another issue of Mantid Magazine?
I'm still saying we. It is a people are helping me try to get this next one going. So hopefully a submission call will be up by late spring 2017. The ultimate goal is to have an issue out around August, so in time for the next Necronomicon convention in Providence, Rhode Island. So that's the goal. Now, whether or not that will happen, we'll have to see. Yeah. But people should keep an eye on both the main website and the Facebook page, mm-hmm. and Twitter. We're on Twitter as well, because all the announcements will be made there about submissions.
Excellent. Now, Rhode Island and Necronomicon, will we expect to see you in the dealer room at Necronomicon?
I'm not sure. I have to do a bunch of running around for that convention next time. So we'll see. I mean, it's you know, preliminary plans. It's a little far away to know what's going to be happening, but I'm sure that I'll be there in some capacity, and we'll probably have issues of Mantid on me for bargain prices, so people can find me and get those off of me. I will probably have back issues as well, because they were a little pricey, and I want to be able to have them for half, you know, at least half price for people when they come to events, and so that's one thing. But yeah, I will be at the convention, so in some capacity.
Excellent, and I hope to see you there.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Now, are you familiar with the way that Google Hangouts work, just to close it out?
I am not.
Oh, let me just close out the window and it ends the chat. But if you would like to continue talking, we most certainly can do so.
I will if you steer it, because I don't quite know.
Okay. What movies have you been watching lately? Have you been watching any movies or reading any books? Yeah, what media?
Let's kind of close up with this. I'll just throw people everything that I've been kind of consuming.
Yeah.
On this kind of brigade of consuming media lately. So I just did, I'm doing kind of a informal horror and art house and thrillers film thing. I just rewatched Psycho. I haven't seen Psycho in, God, like a decade.
Awesome.
So that was, I forgot how brilliant that is. I just saw The Tenant for the first time. Have you seen that film? No, it's a Roman Polanski film. I it's part of what... it's called The Apartment Trilogy. Brilliant. I don't want to get too much into it because you should see it. It's a brilliant film, but anybody who is interested in kind of thrillers and psychological examinations of identity, you know, if you like Kafka, it's kind of very Kafka-esque in the way it presents things. And honestly, I felt that it had kind of a literary bent for a film, which I appreciate. So people might want to look into that. I think what else I've been watching.
It's the third time The Tenant has come up in discussion.
Yeah, it's really brilliant. What else? I've been watching kind of Tarkovsky films as well. Stalker. But you know, more so like reading as well. Right now I'm trying to read a lot of weird fiction. I'm always reading weird fiction, but I'm trying to read a lot of the current releases. I would recommend people pick up. Oh, what do you want to? Did you want to say something?
I was. Remember when you had me read Head Full of Ghosts?
Yes.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
That was, yes. Thank you for talking me into that, because otherwise I wouldn't have.
Yeah, people. So that's Paul Tremblay who wrote that, and I would recommend everyone to read that book, because that was brilliant. And honestly, that was one of the books that I was in a bit of a reading hiatus. I'd say before like spring coming into, you know, I want to say early spring. That one I read that, and I was all like, okay, I'm going to read. I'm going to never stop reading, and really clicked me back into that love of reading. So I would recommend that book to everyone. And also just to touch upon what we were talking about, people should, not just for Manted in terms of, you know, but for books that they actually want to read from small press or specific authors that they can't find. Go to the librarians, go to your local libraries, ask them to get those books in.
Yes.
Because like you were saying, people, you know, not just for, you know, oneself, but other people want to, you know, it would be good to have for people to have access to those types of things. Because otherwise it's still a very niche thing, but there are people who would love to read these books and they just don't know about them. So that's important. So I would suggest that people do that. I just finished Grass by Anya Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. I loved it so much. I'd say pick it up, but I believe it was a limited release. So I'm not sure if there are copies or if there will be. But that was a very good story. What else?
I did see the artwork for it. The artwork for it was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, Dim Shores is a great, really great for a small press and high quality in what they release. And you know, I'm very happy with the fiction that they put out. Word Horde as well. A big Livia Llewellyn fan. I think she's just incredible, an incredible writer. You know, she's the kind of thing that people, in my mind, I say, I ask myself when I look at some of the writers when I'm going through, I say, who will people be studying? And, well, hopefully if we're still all, you know, people are still existing in 300 years and there are still academic institutions and people still read. In that event, what will people be reading? So to me, Olivia Wilde, I'm like, she's the person, she's one of those people that people are going to be reading far after we're all gone. That's the degree of how much I just her writing hits me incredibly, which I think might just be, you know, a lot of that is just kind of my personal taste in writing, which is kind of skews, I don't want to say decadent, because I get into this argument with people about kind of decadence versus symbolism. Decadence, but like the movements, you know, there was this argument about kind of a, I had this conversation with somebody, this argument about kind of 1890s writing and decadent writing versus symbolism. I'll make this a very quick kind of roundup of it. So we're having this discussion about whether or not some of the modern weird harkens back to one or the other. And if there's kind of external landscapes at the expense of internal kind of psychological, all this stuff, whatever. I will go off on a rant forever. So I'll just say, you know what? I'll just cut that there. I love Olivia Llewellyn, Pick Up Furnace. Yeah. And I'll shut up because I'll just go on forever about, you know, my specific opinions about certain stories.
Man, I just repicked up Nice Known Cities of the Interior again. And am a little over halfway through that. So that's all I'm going to add to that. So, speaking of internalism versus externalism.
Yeah. So. But other than that, I've just been reading, I like German literature, German romanticism. I like surrealist things very much. And I'm trying to revisit a lot of those things because a lot of what I draw from for my own fiction, I don't necessarily draw from existing horror. I draw from things that people aren't necessarily looking at right now, at least not on a grand scale. Trying to think what else. Yeah, that's pretty much it for now, I think.
Yeah, I am going to say something about Tremblay's Head Full of Ghosts, but I'm not going to do it on air because I don't want to spoil it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm down for questions, yeah. Also, if people ever want to ask me questions about, you know, even if they just want book recommendations, I'm always very happy to do that, or advice about anything, really. I just want people to know that I'm accessible, so they can email mantidmagazine@gmail.com or grimoirepictures@gmail.com, and they can ask me anything, and I try to be very kind of inclusive and try to spread the word about good books and how to do things if they don't really know in terms of film or editing or whatever. So that's just my one thing.
Excellent. So again, Farah, I am going to thank you very, very, very much for taking the time to come on the show with us today. And I'm going to go ahead and close out the interview. You have a fantastic, fantastic evening, everyone. Thank you.
This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network. For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.